This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, May 20th at 4:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The flowers are blooming. The birds are singing, and KBOO's Spring Membership Drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at bit.ly/KBOO between now and May 25th and support Avant-Garde Airwaves. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Thank you so much for your support.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're building bridges and not walls to keep people segregated. Mohammed Monadel Herzalah, a member of the National Committee of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network and with the Arab American Union Members Council and a teacher in the San Francisco Teachers Union and plaintiff in the suit Defense for Children International Palestine versus Biden. Many world leaders have welcomed a United Nations Security Council resolution that demands an immediate ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian group Hamas in Gaza. While the United States, this time, it abstained from the vote, the remaining 14 council members voted for the resolution. The resolution, which the U.S. said it did not agree with in its entirety, calls for an immediate ceasefire for the duration of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. It calls for the ceasefire to lead to a lasting truce for the release of all hostages held by Hamas in Gaza and for respect for international law from each party when it comes to detainments. The U.S. abstained. Munadel, you are from Gaza, and it is really good to have you with us. Please tell us about your personal family situation that caused you to become a plaintiff in the federal suit against President Biden, Secretary of State Blinken, and Secretary of Defense Austin for failing in their legal responsibility to prevent and their complicity in Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, a suit which seeks to halt U.S. support for Israel's assault, including stopping and joining the transfer of more weapons and unconditional support to the Israeli government. Talk about your personal situation. This is a matter of life and death. Monadel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to make a short comment on the resolution. This is, in fact, the immediate ceasefire is a step in the right direction for a sustainable cessation of this aggression that our families and our people in Gaza are going through. This aggression, this unconditional, we're really seeking a council, immediate ceasefire must be a step forward towards a sustainable cessation of all aggression against the people of Gaza, an unconditional breaking of siege, return of all displaced persons to the homes from which they were displaced, and the conclusion of hostage exchange deal to be concluded. Despite of the attempts to weaken this resolution and making it empty of its context, I feel like this its link to a temporary but not sustainable ceasefire by this American administration and its allies. It confirms actually to the whole entire world that are fed up with the Zionist entity in the face of the horror of genocide war that is committing against our people in Gaza. So, U.S. administration could not bear repercussions of voting with another veto after the escalation of public opinion's anger over the U.S. government positions on this continued genocide. I am one of a group of individuals who have suffered the loss of their family members as a result of this ongoing genocide against the people of Gaza. I have been in the United States for decades, and I have done everything possible in my power to protest these unjust policies supported by the U.S. foreign policy. A group of people came to us, and we know very well that the U.S. government, presented by the President Biden and Blinken and Austin, have the power. They have the responsibility towards the Constitution, towards the humanity, towards everybody in the whole world to stop this from the beginning. First, they were not able to stop it. Two, they were complicit in doing so. And three, they did not stop it as we speak until now, where people are suffering. They are being killed around the clock in the middle of genocidal war against our people. This has led to the destruction of everything in Gaza: hospitals, health centers, schools, universities, streets. I have lost 11 members of my family, the youngest of whom was 4 years old, a niece. Her name is Ward, which means in Arabic flower. So we're wondering how many more flowers are they going to cut to make the profit continues, because we know it's all about the wealth, it's all about the oil, it's all about the strategic role that Israel is playing for the whole world. We could see that our people, our families are paying the price of a greed and vicious attack against humanity.
Monadel, given these conditions, can you expand on it in terms of an assessment of the conditions on the ground of this 170 days of bombardment and the intentional starvation of Gaza?
We're living through a wholesale slaughter and forced dislocation. My family has moved from one place to another, from Gaza City to Khan Yunis. Now, most of everybody else, over 1 million in Rafah, this ethnic cleansing being committed against the people of Palestine, the people of Gaza. This devastating war has its catastrophe, have forced upon us also workers. Unemployment in Gaza was in 2022 45%. It means that they have no, the population living below the national poverty line compared to West Bank, it's 14%, or now it's much worse. It is basically, the condition are horrible. There was more than 150,000 Palestinian workers from the occupied West Bank entered Israeli daily to work in agriculture and construction. Now, nearly all these workers returning, unable to return to their job. What we see in the U.S. media, they only talk about the effect of that on the Israeli economy and not hardly talk about the workers or the union members in Palestine, in Gaza. At the beginning of the aggression, we're in direct contact with the Palestinian trade unions in Gaza who have considered themselves an integral part of their people, you know, not separated from reality. The workers have suffered and lost thousands of members, union offices, facilities, other institutions, in spite of their effort to provide relief to the people with limited support they have received and to raise voice of our people in the international forums. They try to, amidst the rubble, the ruins of the homes, all the workshops, all the factories, all the stores, all the institutions were destroyed by the Israeli occupation using the U.S.-made weapons in the name of claiming that Israel is defending itself, and now the whole world exposing the reality of what's going on in the ground.
Mohammed Monadel Hersalach is our guest, and he right now is focusing on workers, on the working class, which we have heard little to nothing in the media about. And let's just parse that out for a moment. So there are the workers in Gaza, the rate of employment and the lack of work there. There is the issue of the occupied West Bank and the condition of the workers there who go through innumerable checkpoints to be able to work outside of the West Bank. And then there are the other group of Palestinian workers from Tel Aviv and what is designated as Israel. Let's just start and understand what these different groups of workers have gone through specifically in the now 171 days of this bombardment and deliberate starvation in Gaza. So the tens of thousands of workers in quote-unquote Israel that are being expelled, which means the loss of their residencies, the loss of their livelihood, and the march to Gaza, which now is in fact a death camp. So talk about what actually was happening to those Palestinian workers who have been expelled from areas like Tel Aviv and what we would call now Israel proper.
Workers who used to go to the beyond the green line, they call it, in the 1948 area, used to work from Gaza and the West Bank to the factories and the agriculture, basically constructions and agricultures. That's what they mostly work at. When the war started, it really has impacted these workers. They were forced to walk back to Gaza, where tortured. Some of them were arrested and then were forced to strip them naked and had forced them back to Gaza, barely living in this situation right now. Before then, the workers inside Israel did not have the full rights as workers who are Israeli citizens. The Histadrut has always discriminated against the Palestinian workers in Nazareth and in Haifa and in Yaffa and all the Palestinians' work sites. So there was discriminating not only by the employer, but also not getting their rights fulfilled by their own representations, considered to be a labor organization supporting them. Workers in Gaza are the most devastated right now. They are basically helping other families. They're trying to basically, you know, they're like busy shrouding dozens of people who are being killed around the clock in the middle of the genocidal war against the people in every sense of the word. This has led the destructions of all, everything has to do with workers. People hardly know that they are workers who are below the poverty line that works in Palestine, in the West Bank, in Gaza. and inside the green light in 48 in Haifa and Yaffa and Nazareth.
And we should mention that Histadrut, which proclaims, which is highly debatable, to be a labor entity which is supported and has been by too many organizations in this country, is an absolutely Jim Crow. It does not permit, it does not represent and deal with Arab workers. It does not deal with Palestinian workers. Palestinians have formed their own labor organizations, which I assume now are absolutely devastated.
Yeah.
The same, I would imagine, is true for what's happening specifically with the workers in the West Bank. Are they permitted, notwithstanding the checkpoints and so on, to provide any of their labor and get paid in Israel?
They barely get paid a fair wages, and also they take taxes from them without any benefits. I mean, they cut, I mean, their paycheck is eaten up by these high taxes. They barely get any benefits from that. You know, you have seen some members who were like being laid off, being fired, and being like losing their job without any possibility of due process or like grievances or any of that sort to protect their rights. We have received a few days ago a call from Palestine General Federation of Trade Unions from Gaza. They mentioned about what people can do to help the workers and the labor unions in Palestine. I've been, you know, proud and honored to receive the call from the unions in Gaza, but also saddened for the fact that we get those kind of calls in the Workers' Day, which is May 1st. When I ask our brothers and comrades over there, they say, you know what, this is too early. Usually, you know, give us the appeal in around April. And the sad part and the horrific feeling about that, it made me very emotional to say, we don't know if we're going to stay alive by then.
So we're talking about a May Day, May 1st celebration, and building to that, even in the midst of this genocide and the responses. We are calling it early now because we don't even know if we will be alive on May Day. Oh, my God. So yeah. Worker to worker, workers of the world unite. I know when we spoke, you were somewhat miffed, understandably, appreciative on one hand that there are now more than 270 unions in this country that have passed ceasefire resolutions of some kind or another, but that's not enough. So tell us what your brethren, our siblings in the labor force in Gaza, Hebron, Israel, are demanding. What do we need to do?
Since the beginning of the aggression, labor unions, Palestinian, have considered themselves, like I said, integral part of our people. Despite their efforts to provide relief to our people, because they're the most active, the most dynamic, you know how union activists are, but the limited support they have received to raise the voice of our people loudly in the international forums. They are really critical about the fact that they have encountered silence and neglect by the international labor movement. I respect that because that's the real thing. However, they recognize the fact that there are some exceptional examples of unions, clearly demonstrated leading protests denouncing the Zionist war of genocide being waged on our people. So they have a certain demands. If you don't mind me reading them, I would want to do that.
Please do, sir.
Okay. He said, dear comrades in the American unions, several actions have come to light during the aggression, which must be closely observed and exposed. First, U.S. unions need to expose the extent of the war crimes and genocide committed against our people and the biased American position and complicity enabling aggression. This must be confronted and continue to be protested to exert pressure against the export of U.S.-made weapons to the occupation. Pressure must be increased on the U.S. administrations and politicians to abandon these hostile actions against the Palestinian people. Secondly, there is an Israeli decision to suspend or terminate the contract of thousands of workers in Gaza by local Arab international institutions in connection with the war of extermination, depriving employees of their rights and compensation. It would have been better for these institutions to strengthen the workers' economic security by implementing support packages instead of firing them from work. This issue must be at the core of your concern and struggle. Thirdly, the international labor union movement, including International Federation of Trade Unions, retreated to verbally positions without taking measures on the ground or pressuring the decision makers to stop this war of extermination, limiting unions' activities to conferences and statements, and not delving deeply into the need of guaranteed humanitarian aid or influencing international public opinion to expose the truth about Zionist crimes and the practices of allied countries that continue to support Israel. Among these steps is the struggle to ban the occupation trade unions internationally, which is meant the Hosted Route, as they are partners, exactly what, like you said, in the war of genocide. In particular, we call on American unions to boycott these unions to protest their complicity in this genocidal war. Fourth, unions can play an influential role in the United States to provide relief for hundreds of thousands of workers' families whose homes and workplace have been destroyed, leaving them to shelter in tents without any work or any income. You can contribute to a financial project that, you know, relief funds for workers and confederations can alleviate the suffering of the thousands. And lastly, they said, dear comrades, we call on you to be our voice and advocate inside and outside America. What our people are experiencing and what workers and unions in particular are exposed to in this most horrific catastrophe known to humanity in the recent decades. We ask that you convey our message and give voice to the suffering of hungry, starving workers and their families, not just to the American people, not just to your unions, but to the entire world. We are a people enduring bombardment, hunger, disease, and all forms of suffering, but we are determined to live and to stand firm and to rebuild from this destruction with our blood and many sacrifices. And thank you for your efforts, and happy Workers' Day. We will certainly carry the banner of victory despite the killing and the destruction.
Now that's quite something, and that is really a call for May Day in May, but delivered early because people do not know whether they will live to see May Day. So we must make it so, and I feel both privileged and honored to receive a message from the Gaza Trade Union Federation and reiterate, as my union has, the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is part of the UAW, ceasefire resolutions, but that's not enough. There has to be boycott, divestment, sanction movements as well. Unions in American venues must boycott Israeli companies and those that make weapons. They must block the goods, the boats that come in from Israel as part of the boycott process. That means that we have to emulate the work that's been done by the dock workers in California who have stopped the boats. And we need to do that in other portside venues with the workers. And again, to boycott the companies that make the weaponry. We must speak much more aggressively and forcefully to our politicians, and particularly those who are financed by AIPAC. We must demand more forcefully, more aggressively. It's unconscionable that there should have been an abstention on the part of the U.S. for another proposed ceasefire in the United Nations. We've got to make our resolutions have teeth And we, in the rank and file, as Mohammed Monadel Herzalek has said, must be much more forceful, much more aggressive, divest, boycott, divest, sanction, and make our politicians stop the genocide in our name and stop the flow of military weaponry and stop the flow of cash. And I want to give you just an opportunity to take us out. You mentioned, Mohammed, that 11 members of your family had been killed, and the youngest being a four-year-old who was named Flower. I mean, my heart just breaks in half with that. So your final thoughts to the people of good conscience in this country and people in the labor movement and people in the working class, what they must do and why it's so imperative to support their siblings in Gaza, their siblings in Hebron and the occupied West Bank, and their fellow workers who have now been expelled en masse from work in Israel, are left destitute if they haven't been arrested, tortured, and then sent back to Gaza, which is a death camp now. Your final thoughts on what we do as workers of the world to support Gaza, to support Palestine.
Thank you so much again for giving me the chance to be here with you. I feel as a Palestinian, as a union member, as a human being, that we are living in a defining moment, which means that being inside same side with the Palestinian movement and the Palestinian workers, we are standing with the humanity. We're standing with defining the moment to change for a better world. And I think the time that we're criticizing Israel was a taboo, it has to be broken. We are very proud and very honored to see the growing number of our brothers and sisters in the Jewish community participating in a very, very genuine way to raise their voice and say, this is cannot and will not be representing us. And the fact that the unions, always this question coming to me, like what's the certain sector can do for the Palestinians? I would say, frankly, it's for you. You do it for yourself, not for the Palestinians, for the fact that it is not fair for union members to look for two jobs, three jobs to really pay rent and pay the expenses because of the economy. And then they put the priority for building this military and death machines. It is my job as a worker in America to say, I'm not going to pay for these millions of dollars for death and destructions, not in my name, not anymore. Therefore, you know, when the Democrats and the Republicans debate about the budget, and they're like the Democrats celebrate that they were able to lower the budget from $800 billion to $750 billion, they call it a win, and that's not fair. The unions movement is no longer can be a tool for any political party. We cannot work for the politicians. The politicians has to work for us. Has to work for the working families. So
have about 30 seconds left.
I would say that for the union, for the labor movement to be good for the Palestinian people and elsewhere in the whole world, is to be a good representative of the working class. Once they become a genuine representative of the working class of America, we are in a much, much better place.
And we've been speaking with Mohammed Monadel Herzalek, a member of the National Committee of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network and the Arab American Union Members Council. And we were really delighted to bring to you early, which you'll hear more about, the demands that are raised from the Federation of Trade Unions of Palestinians in Gaza, the Gaza Trade Union Federation. We've got a lot of work to do, and we'll tell you more in the coming weeks. how you can support, continue to keep the pressure on, ceasefire now, self-determination. Don't forget that. Self-determination after the bombing stops. Self-determination, and we stand as one, because as we always say, workers of the world, unite.
You have nothing to lose but your chains.
And a world to win. Thank you, Mohammed. Stay strong. We'll also catch up with you on what's happening, which I know will there'll be a hearing on the lawsuit that you're involved in against Blinken, Austin, and Biden for their complicity in genocide, which will take place in June. Thank you again. We've been speaking with Mohammed Monadel Hersalah. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we thank you for listening. Stay strong, pay close attention, educate, agitate, and organize.